This is the keynote address that U.S. Senator John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, delivered to the 10th Annual Immigration Law and Policy Conference. He's introduced by Doris Meisner, who directs the Migration Policy Institute's U.S. Immigration Policy Program. Here now, Doris Meisner.
Okay. Well, it's now my pleasure to be able to introduce to you a leader who is truly a long-distance runner in this field that we all work on. With the departure of Senator Kennedy, with whom he teamed up regularly in immigration battles, I think it's fair to say that Senator McCain is one of a really small handful of senators who have been with this issue for a long time, know it well, and whose views are highly respected and influential with his colleagues on both sides of the aisle, as well as with the broad public. He and I have worked together over many years across many a witness table and in Arizona. He's a fierce advocate for his state and for his constituents, and at the same time, he is a pragmatic, solution-driven legislator. It's in that connection that his decision in January to champion broad immigration reform was pivotal in the formation of the Gang of Eight, which then was remarkably successful in enacting a big, sweeping immigration overhaul in June. But he hasn't stopped there. Since then, he's continued to fight very hard to advance the cause of immigration reform. So I'd like to salute his efforts and thank him for being here today with us in that regard. He is going to make remarks for a short period, and then he will be open for your questions until a hard stop in about a half an hour, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3:15 to 3:20. Senator McCain, please join me in welcoming him.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Doris. Thank you for those kind remarks. They are hard to come by these days for a member of Congress. I can assure you. I just saw a poll. You probably didn't miss it. Approval rating of Congress is now down to 12%. We're down to paid staffers and blood relatives. And, you know, I've used that line a lot over the years. I got a call from my 101-year-old mother a few days ago, and now we're down to paid staff. So I thank all of you for being here. I thank you for your involvement and interest in this issue that I think has a huge impact on the future of our nation, and also in many ways is a defining element as to what kind of a nation we really are. And Doris, I want to thank you for all your great work over the years. She is a source of knowledge and information that is matched by none. And her advocacy and continued work has been an inspiration to a lot of us. I'd like to start out by mentioning just a couple aspects of it and then a couple of comments, and then I'd look forward to respond to any questions or comments that you might have. First of all, one of the criticisms that you hear about comprehensive immigration reform is it will have a bad impact on our economy, and we will have all these low-skilled workers flooding the workforce and displacing American workers. I'm sure many of you have seen some of the well-funded television spots about it. And, of course, that's demonstrably false. If there is one institution in the United States Capitol that still has enormous credibility, it's the Congressional Budget Office. The Congressional Budget Office did a study of this legislation, and they came to a lot of conclusions, and I would refer you to their conclusions in detail in the document. But the bill would reduce the budget deficit by $850 billion over the next 20 years. It would add $300 billion to the Social Security Trust Fund over the next decade. In addition to a new report by the Bipartisan Policy Center, the immigration reform bill would grow the U.S. economy an additional 4.8% over a 20-year period. It would reduce cumulatively federal deficit by nearly $1.2 trillion over a 20-year period. Increase residential construction spending by an average of $68 billion per year over a 20-year period. This bill creates more visas for families by removing the cap for spouses and minor children of green card holders. It has 112,000 annual visas for agricultural workers, up to 200,000 annual visas for low-skill workers, creates a green card for graduates of U.S. universities with an advanced degree in a STEM field, and that also has a job offer, increases the number of H-1Bs from 65,000 to 110,000 with the ability to increase to 180,000 if the demand warrants it, and it makes more employment green cards available by exempting spouses and children, those with extraordinary abilities, or anyone with a doctorate in a STEM field. So, for those in the country illegally to be eligible for a resident permanent status, immigrant status, and eventually earn citizenship, they'd have to have been physically present in the United States before December 2011, pay all taxes, not been convicted of one felony or three misdemeanors, and get in line behind all of those legally waiting for a green card. The other criticism of this legislation is that our border, it does not hold provisions that would secure our border. My friends, if we implemented all the provisions of this legislation, we would have the most heavily guarded border since the fall of the Berlin Wall. This additional amendment that I know Doris is familiar with, the Hoeven-Corker Amendment, adds 20,000 Border Patrol. And by the way, as one who has been down on the border for the last 30 years, it is not people that will ensure our border security. It is technology. We have developed technology, particularly in the Iraq and Afghan war, where we can surveil and we can track people and we can apprehend. If you ever go to Israel, you'll see surveillance of the border in certain areas and teams that go out and intercept people who may be crossing the border. I am confident that we can attain and maintain 90% effective control of our border if we implement in this bill the list that was given to us by the head of the Border Patrol, who assures us that if we adopt these provisions and these technologies that we can have effective control of our border. I would like to add one caveat to that, my friends, that we never talk about, and that is drugs. As long as there's a demand for drugs in this country, drugs are going to be in this country. They'll dig tunnels, they'll fly ultralights, they'll build submarines in order to get drugs where and make the incredible profits that the cartels are able to achieve. So we're going to have a national conversation about drugs and the usage of drugs and the glamorization of drugs and the legalization or non-legalization of drugs in this country. But I don't want to say anything more about that issue because we are talking about immigration reform. Additionally, there's 11 million people who are living in the shadows in this country today. There's 11 million people who do not have the protection of our laws and our Constitution. There are 11 million people who are being exploited, many of them. There are 11 million people who are living in constant fear of being apprehended and deported to the country that they came from. The overwhelming majority of them, obviously, are citizens that are contributing enormously to our economy. They're not leaving. They're not leaving. We're not going to line up buses and send them down to Mexico or wherever it is the hell that people want them sent to. And so as long as they are here and we're not going to deport them, that's de facto amnesty. I loved it for years. The talk show hosts used to call Senator Graham and me Amnesty John and Lindsay Gomez. That was their favorite appellation for the two of us. And finally, I'd like to mention to you that today, probably sometime in the next few days, the Border Patrol down south of Tucson will find some bodies in the desert, people who were abandoned by the coyotes as they brought them across. Sometime today, they'll come across people who are in terrible shape, who have been abandoned, who need medical help because of the treatment that they've received from these unspeakable individuals who bring them across. Sometime in the next few days, our police in Phoenix will raid a, quote, drop house. You know what a drop house is? It's where they bring these people that they brought up illegally across our border, and they keep them crowded conditions, unspeakable conditions, in a house while they demand ransom from their families back down in whatever country that they came from. It's terrible. It's terrible. And so there's a human side of this story as well. You all know the story of the Dreamers. And I won't even go into that because everyone is familiar with that aspect of this story as well. And finally, I'd like to end up by mentioning to you a story that brings home all of this to me, which happened to me and Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman in 2007 in Baghdad, Iraq. Every year for many years now, Lindsey Graham and I and Joe Lieberman have gone either to Iraq or Kabul for 4th of July to be with the troops. In 2007, General Petraeus, for the 4th of July, invited Lindsey Graham and me and Joe to attend and speak at a reenlistment ceremony for some 800 brave Americans who were reenlisting to stay and fight in Iraq when their enlistment had expired. It took place in Saddam Hussein's old palace. There was probably 1,000 people there. There was also a group of 80-some people who were green card holders who were receiving their citizenship that day, their naturalization. Many of you probably know that if you are a green card holder and you join the military, you have an accelerated path to citizenship. We walked in, all these people were there, and I looked in the front row of the naturalization ceremony people, and there was 4 empty seats. And on those seats were boots, were sitting on them. And I said to General Petraeus, I said, "What is that?" He said, "Oh, they were killed in the last 48 hours, and we're going to give them their citizenship posthumously." That really is a remarkable story, and I don't have to tell you the lesson involved in it. So this is a effort about the present and the future of America. It's about what defines what kind of a nation we are. And the reason why the United States nation is the exceptional nation and the last century was called the American century is because we've had a fresh infusion of blood and vitality into our nation generation after generation in our history. And that is something we should celebrate. And it's something that we should continue to celebrate and appreciate. We all want legal immigration, but we have an issue before us that I think must define this nation, and I still believe that we can convince our colleagues that sooner rather than later would be better, we will address this issue and make America the nation that we want our children to be proud of. Thank you very much.
Okay, questions. Senator, we have mics here, and they'll take
questions
the mics
or comments
here.
Or insults. All right, goodbye. Oh, there.
Senator McCain, Ted Alden from the Council on Foreign Relations. I just want to commend you at the outset on S-744, which is an impressive piece of legislation. I think it got a little less impressive from your initial drafts through the final Senate passage, but still a very, very good bill in a lot of ways.
I know you realize that this is a product of compromise.
Absolutely. And that's actually my question now is, what stage are we at now? Are we at a stage where this really is pure politics? So can the Republican Party be persuaded that passing comprehensive reform is in its electoral political interest? Or is there still room for creative policy compromise? You know, we now have comprehensive versus piecemeal. Could we do it in two chunks, perhaps? A first chunk that was employer enforcement plus DREAM Act, a second chunk. I mean, is there any scope for policy debate at this point, or is it really all pure politics now?
I think a lot of it is politics. I think we have to understand that many Republican members come from districts that have little or no Hispanic population, that probably the majority of the constituents that they represent are opposed to comprehensive immigration reform, and we all want to represent our constituencies. I think that there is a lack of coherence right now in the House of Representatives, as we saw during this whole obscene shutdown exercise that we just went through, where it's hard to get the House of Representatives, Republicans, to moving in the same direction. And yet my hope is that my colleagues on the House will recognize how strongly the American people disapprove of all of us, because we don't do anything for them in their view. All we do is fight with each other. And to join together, perhaps, and enacting immigration, comprehensive immigration reform or partial immigration reform would show them that there are areas that we can cooperate in. Some say that because of the shutdown, they're more angry, etc. Well, sooner or later, we have to understand that people are elected to public office because their constituents approve of them. If they overwhelmingly disapprove of them, they're going to try to find somebody that they approve of. And so what I'm hoping is that my colleagues and I treat them with respect, with total respect. I do not disrespect them. They think we're all snobs in the Senate anyway, and I mean, that's probably true. But, you know, there are four Republican House members in my delegation. They inquired as to my health daily. So I'm hoping that we can get some agreement there. And what we really have to bring home to people is it's not going away. The issue is not going away unless you believe that somehow 11 million people are somehow going to, quote, one of the worst phrases of the 2012 campaign, are going to, quote, self-deport. And if you believe that, you believe that pigs fly. So thank you for the question. I will remain optimistic, and I have to.
Senator McCain, my name is Zach Brown from the Institute for the Study of International Migration here at Georgetown. My question is in regards to interior enforcement and workplace enforcement. It's been a common topic of discussion today. I'd ask if you would say a few words about the Portman Tester Amendment and then potentially speculate on the appetite for interior enforcement in the House. I know Chair Gidlotti has a bill sitting in committee, but just wondering if you have thoughts on that. Thank you.
Rob Portman has done some very hard work in that area. And obviously, if we went to conference, we would be looking at any way that we could have a improvement on what is a vital part of any comprehensive immigration reform, and that is E-Verify. Unless employers know that if they knowingly hire someone who is in this country illegally, that they will be punished by it, then we won't be able to control the hiring of people in this country illegally. It's just a fact. Do you agree, Doris?
Absolutely.
And so E-Verify, which we do have the technology for, can play a major role in other procedures. But we now have a technology where you can swipe somebody's card and you may have to, and it'll be matched up, and you may have to do some other things like questions in some certain cases. It's not quite that easy. But as opposed to not that long ago, I think E-Verify is obviously a vitally important element, because unless someone, you've got to have employers know for sure that people are there legally, but at the same time, if they're able to just say, well, I didn't know, then it's hard to prosecute people. You see my point? Right now in Nogales, Arizona, you can buy a birth certificate for $20 or $30. I don't, or less. I've forgotten now. So there's no doubt that many employers, particularly small employers today, somebody shows up with false documentation, but that employer doesn't have any way of verifying that or not verifying that. That's why you verify is a vitally important part of this legislation, in my view. And the Portman Amendment, if it improves it, we would certainly take that in serious consideration during conference.
Mike, here. Here.
Senator McCain, I was just curious. In the last several years, several states have passed their own immigration legislation because they seem to be disappointed with the lack of action at the federal level. And I just wondered if you have a dialogue going with Governor Brewer of Arizona, since Arizona is one of the states that has chosen to go down that path, if there is sort of a dialogue between the federal level representation and their home states that have chosen to act on their own.
Well, let me just say that Arizona enacted legislation which was largely condemned. But Arizona legislature enacted that legislation because of the frustration they felt, and I think appropriately felt, because of the problem we have in our state with borders that are not secure. We had our citizens, and every citizen has the right and must be able to protect themselves and their own property. That was not the case in southern Arizona. Our ranchers down in southern Arizona, every night, people were crossing their property. One of our ranchers was shot and killed. We think with one, I believe, as I recall, one of the guns that was used in Fast and Furious. So our citizens were not living in a secure environment because of the intense traffic across our southern border. Arizona was the major funnel for drugs and for people who are crossing our country illegally. So when you point the finger and talk about how terrible the Arizona legislature was and the governor, I hope you will take in consideration that we really had an insecure environment, and every American citizen deserves to live in a secure environment. And it was not, I guarantee you, because I've been down there so many times. Now, because we have taken certain measures and improved border security, and border security has improved, my friends, although the bad news is the illegal immigrant apprehensions have gone up in the last year, and that's because of an improving economy and a better job opportunity than there was during the recession. I've had many conversations with Governor Brewer. And no, is she solidly on board with our legislation? No, but as you notice, that she has not been overly critical of it either. And I have had many meetings with our legislators, state legislators, and explained to them what we're trying to do. And I've met largely with a favorable review of what we're trying to do. I want to mention one other in reference to the first question. I've been in this issue, and I, as Doris mentioned, I was with Ted Kennedy. I miss him a lot because there's nobody I've been able to fight with that was as good as Ted Kennedy was. He and I both shared the same philosophy: a fight not joined is a fight not enjoyed. But the politics of it, first of all, I'm in this nothing to do with politics, but it's a reality that if Republicans passed, were part of the passage of comprehensive immigration reform, we would be on a level playing field and be able to compete for the Hispanic voter. Unless we do, we will not compete for the Hispanic voter. So I am ready to do combat with my Democrat friends for the Hispanic voter, whether it be whether it be taxes, whether it be government regulation, whether it be national security, whether it be pro-life, whatever it is, I'm ready to compete. Small business, but we can't compete unless we get this issue done. Poll after poll will tell you that our Hispanic voter view this as the Irish did, as a major issue in their calculations as to their political allegiance. That's just a fact. Go ahead.
Thank you so very much. Is this working? Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so very much. Senator McCain, it is both a pleasure and a privilege to be able to ask you a question. My name is Rita Hirona Adkins. I'm a journalist. I write for immigrant, particularly Asian Pacific American audiences in the United States, as well as I also contribute to publications, especially in the Philippines. And I've been writing about immigration issues, et cetera, and all that. So, Senator McCain, if I may speak, and if I may rumble through, please forgive me.
I do it all the time.
About what I'm feeling from the Asian Pacific American community in the United States, which, you know, is about probably about, what, 10 million and growing? It's one of the fastest growing immigrant communities. And one concern that they have about the current bills, so far as the CIR, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, is that they have dropped the family-oriented kinds of considerations, especially regarding siblings or members of the family who are under 30 years old. Now, they feel that for about as long as the Asian Pacific American migration has been coming to the United States, they have contributed in large measure to the economy. As the thinking and the philosophy and the ideology and the sympathy for the current immigration bill is more stressed, stresses rather the skill set, I mean the skill kinds of considerations, as compared to the family-based kinds of considerations. Now, they also feel that over a period of years, the people who come here from Asia are among the best and the brightest, and they have contributed not only to the economy in the United States, but also now that we're pivoting, when we say we, of course, the United
States. All right,
States,
you're rambling enough.
Asia, et cetera. and we need the Asian Pacific American tigers that are growing there. We need them economically, security, et cetera, and all that, so that this flow of the immigrants who will be coming here, over 30 years old, are potential contributors to the U.S. economy, as they've always done before. What is your take, sir, regarding that concern?
My take is that it was a compromise that was made. There is a concern. I think Doris could talk about the very large number of family members that apply, particularly from some of the Asian Pacific countries, and it was just one of those compromises that we reached in this many hour after hour of negotiations, and frankly, it was one of the recommendations that we got from the administration.
You're in the front.
Could I mention one thing, Father, before the coalition behind this legislation is the largest than I've ever seen. The Catholic Church, evangelicals, the farm workers. I even had dinner with Richard Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO. That shows you how far I have sunk. The Chamber of Commerce, the high-tech community, Silicon Valley, you name it. They're behind this. We had, in case you missed it, a rollout, the eight of us, we had assembled behind us literally every major interest in the United States of America. So what's the problem? Poll after poll after poll shows that well over 70% of the American people say they support a path to citizenship, pay back taxes, learn English, get them line behind everybody else, pay the fees, that. But here's the problem. The 70% that are strongly in support say they support it. There are a very vocal, active, very energetic opposition, and it's funded. And that's one of the problems that we have. If you believe that comprehensive immigration is as important as you do by being here today, then get active. and get involved and get engaged, Father. And pray for us. Yeah.
Well, I do more than that. Father Ippolito, Catholic Charities in Raleigh. I do the immigration law for Catholic Charities in the diocese. No question, just a comment on behalf of those of us who labor day after day getting immigration benefits for the poor, the marginalized. Thank you for taking leadership on this issue in the Senate.
Thank you, Father. And the church has been wonderful. Our evangelicals, which is really important in the South, as you know, in particular, they have been tremendous. I've been very, very grateful. I say in some candor, I wish the business community had been as active as some of our faith-based organizations have been. Any more?
Right here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Whoops, sorry.
The other mouth.
Go ahead.
Bueno, I'm Peggy Ostrowski. I'm the congressional correspondent for the Hispanic Outlook magazine on higher education. One of the last hearings in the House before the summer break was on the Kids Act, and it was a very strange hearing since all the Republicans were supporting a version of the Dream Act, and all the Democrats were completely against it. It almost seemed like the Democrats are using the Dream Act as a bait and switch for comprehensive, kind of an all or nothing. So do you see the Kids Act being a viable piecemeal, perhaps along with STEM, graduate STEM people getting green cards? Do you see that as being something viable, or is it all just a political play for comprehensive?
You know, it's hard for me to – thanks for the question, but it's very hard for me to divine the motivations for what is going in the House of Representatives. I am very happy to see that our Republican Party vice presidential candidate, Paul Ryan, has been very much in favor. Congressman Goodlatte has been in favor. There's a number of – a few Republican members of Congress that just declared their support. But I can't really know exactly. You know, I've heard so many different theories about what's going on over there. It's hard for me to know, to answer your question with any accuracy. The important role for me and others to play is to say to our friends in the House, we respect your views. We respect your action, but please act. But please act. Because if we treat them disrespectfully and criticize them, then it's counterproductive.
But what if they do piecemeal?
I think that if that's all they can do and that's what they think is the best way to do it, I think I would be glad to look at that as well. But let me say one important point, and again, the expert is here on my right. There has to be an ultimate path to citizenship, okay? If you have a group of people, even if they're living in your country legally, but they don't over time have the ability to become citizens, then they become separate entities. There are communities outside Paris today that the police don't go into. The French ambassador told me about 187 people they're tracking in Syria fighting for al-Nusra. So if you don't give people a chance to be full and contributing members of a society, it does not work. And frankly, that's the only fundamental principle that I operate on. Do you agree with that, Doris?
I think there's a lot of evidence for that. That's exactly right. I think we need to be mindful of your time, however, and so
okay.
I'd like
we
to say let's have a last question here.
Hello. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming. My question is it your experience that the members of Congress who are not supportive of comprehensive immigration reform are not supportive because of a concern of being defeated during a primary?
Again, it's hard for me to describe their motivation or analyze it. I do know that the Tea Party is a very powerful element. But at the same time, remember, the Tea Party wasn't founded on an anti-immigration issue. They were founded, taxed enough already, taxes and spending. That was the reason why the Tea Party came to prominence. So it's hard for me to imagine that, given the reason why the Tea Party was so successful, certainly in the 2010 elections, that immigration reform was a major part of their message to the people. But I don't think there's any doubt that there are people who worry about candidate from the further to their ideological or not viewed as ideologically pure. We have a system now, unfortunately, that would cause Ronald Reagan to spin in his grave. Ronald Reagan said, quote, "If a fella is with me 80% of the time, he's my friend." Ronald Reagan said, "Never forget the 11th, Republican 11th commandment. 11th commandment is never speak ill of your fellow Republicans." I see those, both of those abandoned in the political arena today. And I just want to, this isn't any on the subject, but it's been on my mind a lot because I was home last week in Arizona and had town hall meetings and traveled around the state. The damage that was done to innocent citizens in my state by the shutdown is reprehensible. There were 600,000 people who were denied access in Arizona to our national parks in Arizona. There's $45 million lost. People who worked in concessions in our national parks aren't federal workers. They're not going to get the back pay. They're not. They live on minimum wage. We had to fly food up to a place called Tucson outside of the Grand Canyon. That's not what the American people deserve. And we're getting the deserved repudiation from the American people. I saw a poll, Gallup poll, or I think it was Gallup, 65% of the American people want somebody else representing them. You know, it used to be that people say, well, I hate Congress, but I love my member of Congress. That's not true anymore. It's not true anymore. I'll tell you how bad it is. I was going through Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport. A guy ran up to me and said, hey, he said, anybody ever tell you look a lot like Senator John McCain? And I said, yeah. And the guy said, well, doesn't it sometimes just make you mad as hell? So thank you all for being here. Thank you very much.
For more information, visit the Migration Policy Institute at www.migrationpolicy.org.